Are we prepared to do something simple and humble when there is no one else around who wants to do it? Welcome, everyone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, and this is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Our host is author, teacher, and itinerant speaker, Kenneth Wong. Well, if you would remember, in yesterday's program, Ken said that church care is the role of every member, not just for the leaders. He also said the primary work in church care is prayer. Well, today, Ken takes his reflection a step further into the area of service, specifically the practical aspects of treating different people in the church, be they older or younger, widows or leaders. Our care for one another will be shown by how we treat others, our attitude toward them, and what we do for them. Here now is Ken with part two of Church Care.
Hi, everyone, and it's lovely to be able to spend this time of refreshing once more with everyone here. We are continuing on the subject of church care, and that's a term that I've coined based on 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 5, where it talks about taking care of the church of God. And the thrust of these messages is that every single member of the church is called to be a church carer or to be a church caretaker. And it's not just the role and responsibility and task of the leaders or an actual church caretaker if you have someone like that in your church. So in considering the practical question of how can I be a church carer, we touched on two things yesterday. The first is to begin by ruling our house. That means managing my own home, family, as well as my own life. And then secondly, it's by praying for all. And the injunctions for praying are laid out for us in chapter 2 of 1 Timothy. So we can exercise church care by first of all ruling our house and secondly by praying for others. Now the third area I want to look at is from chapter 5 of 1 Timothy, and it's found in verse 10, where we have again one of these quaint phrases buried away, and I'm going to borrow that phrase. I'm going to call it washing saints' feet. Now 1 Timothy chapter 5 actually deals with the practical aspects of treating different kinds of people in the church. It talks about older people, younger people, widows, as well as leaders. So this is all very relevant because our care for one another is shown by how we treat others, what is our attitude toward them, and what we do for them. Let me read to you from 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 10, where I got that quaint phrase from. It says, "Well reported for good works, if she has brought up children, if she has lodged strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet," that's the phrase I want, "if she has relieved the afflicted, if she has diligently followed every good work." Now, who's the she that this verse talks about? The context here, as we read in the preceding verse 9, is that of a widow who has a good witness, especially in the ministry of hospitality. And by the way, hospitality literally means a love for strangers. So when I use the term washing saints' feet from this verse, I'm referring to exercising church care by ministering or serving others in the church as well as outside. When Jesus taught us to love our neighbor as ourself, the biblical definition of neighbor, as he explained in the parable of the Good Samaritan, is not so much the one next to us as much as it is the one needing us. And there are a number of practical things that are alluded to in that same verse 10, beginning from lodging strangers, that is showing hospitality, especially to fellow believers whom we may not be personally acquainted with, but with whom we have an immediate and strong affinity because of our common faith in Jesus Christ. And this reminds us, don't forget the strangers who come into your midst, into your meetings. How else can they feel welcome or be included unless someone, especially someone who sits near to them, takes them in, extends that welcome to them, and makes them feel at home? And this is what practical church care requires. This is how strangers who do not at first know the love of God can be shown the love of God and be brought into the faith and thus become a member of the family of God. A church carer must take the initiative and make the first move. Sometimes we do not realize or we forget the tremendous effort and agony that it takes someone who has not come into a church before to take that first step to visit a church. And how sad and what a great loss, both to the church as well as to the person concerned, if that first occasion becomes the last because no one seemed to have bothered or cared for them as a stranger. So the ministry of hospitality really has to do with a mindset that looks out for and cares for strangers to make them feel at home and to feel included. And then in that same verse, here are some more things that are mentioned. If she has lodged strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, which is about serving or ministering to the saints. And by the way, the word saints, as used here, gives us a very clear biblical and practical meaning of saints, which is simply a term for all believers. A saint is someone who has been saved and separated from the world and set apart for God's use. So if you're a Christian and you're a believer, you are a saint. And it has nothing to do with being canonized or idolized as someone to be venerated and worshipped long after you die. And we're going to elaborate on washing the saints' feet later on. And then the third thing that is mentioned here, if she has relieved the afflicted, is a reference to ministering to those who are suffering, whether it's physically, mentally, or emotionally. And then it ends by saying, if she has diligently followed every good work. So the ministry of church caring involves the ministry of good works, which are works done by the grace of God. And this is towards three categories of people. Number one, strangers. Number two, the saints. And number three, the sufferers. All mentioned in this single verse 10. The idea here is a readiness and a willingness to do something lowly when we say washing saints' feet, because it was the job of a servant or a slave to wash the feet of guests in those days. So the question is, are we prepared to do something simple and humble when there is nobody else around who wants to do it? And if you think about it, it's really a simple and pretty straightforward task, just not so pleasant or impressive. It's not something that would add significantly to your CV, your credentials, you know? So that's all it involves, just pouring some water in a basin and then going round from one guest to another to cool and to clean their dusty feet when they come in from the street outside and they remove their sandals. So that was the custom and it's a practical need. So when that is done to a guest or visitor to the house, it is an expression of hospitality, of reverence, of concern and care, and making that person feel welcome, at home, and refreshed. So in a larger sense, we can use that expression, washing saints' feet, as an expression for refreshing one another. In fact, Paul used it in his little personal letter to Philemon. For example, in Philemon verse 7, he writes, "For we have great joy and consolation in your love, because the hearts of the saints have been refreshed by you, brother." And then in the same epistle, in verse 20, it says, "Yes, brother, let me have joy from you in the Lord. Refresh my heart in the Lord." This is the ministry of refreshment, and it should be undertaken voluntarily, not by compulsion. As it says in that same epistle to Philemon, which has no chapters, verse 14, "But without your consent, I wanted to do nothing, that your good deed might not be by compulsion, as it were, but voluntary." So good works have to be undertaken voluntarily, not compulsively or legalistically. As believers, we are called from apathy to empathy. Apathy means that we are indifferent. We can't be bothered. It's not my business. And empathy means that I identify myself so much with a person that I can feel and understand what that person is like, which leads me to do something practical for him or her. So we're called from apathy to empathy, from indifference to identification with others in their need. And this is what leads us to help and to serve others by washing saints' feet, the ministry of refreshment, just helping others to feel better and to promote their sense of well-being. The disciples of Jesus were often found arguing amongst themselves as to who among them was the greatest. For example, in Mark chapter 9, verse 33, when Jesus came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, "What was it you disputed among yourselves on the road?" But they kept silent, for on the road they had disputed among themselves who would be the greatest. And he sat down, called the 12, and said to them, "If anyone desires to be first, he shall be last of all and servant of all." And right in the very next chapter 10 of Mark's Gospel, we read from verses 35 through to 45 about the incident where James and John, the brothers amongst the 12, asked specifically for the two most coveted and privileged positions to be seated on the right hand and on the left of Jesus in a future day of glory. And this was Jesus' reply to them in verse 42. "You know that those who are considered rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. Yet it shall not be so among you, but whoever desires to become great among you shall be your servant. And whoever of you desires to be first shall be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." So we find that it is the same unchanging message that Jesus constantly sought to bring across to them, that they are called to serve others, and not to be somebody big or important that other people are to serve, just as Jesus himself came to serve. And all this is brought to a head in a powerful and vivid demonstration of what this means in John's Gospel, chapter 13, where Jesus demonstrated himself what it means to wash the disciples' feet. This was the beginning of the final week of Jesus on the earth, and he was concerned to bring home this point before he left his disciples. In John's Gospel, chapter 13, verse 4, Jesus rose from supper and laid aside his garments, took a towel and girded himself. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. So here in this episode in the Gospels, we see the phrase washing saints' feet moving beyond being just an expression to an actual enactment. And the fact that it is done by none other than Jesus himself shows us the crux and the core of what it means to wash the saints' feet. Now, if you understand the background which you have considered of the disciples constantly jockeying for the most privileged positions, then we can easily imagine them waiting for someone else to do the obvious. And everyone was thinking to himself that it was beneath him to do so. They had just come in from the dusty streets. This is a special meal, and so this is the expected thing and the customary thing to do. But there were no slaves or servants around. Every one of them was supposed to be a servant to each other. So while they were waiting and wondering about who should be doing the job, and maybe resigning themselves to the fact that we might as well do without it because nobody is willing to do it, and all of a sudden, they found Jesus getting up, pouring water into a basin and starting to wash their feet one at a time. And not only that, to wipe them with a towel after that. And he ended this powerful and practical demonstration with these specific instructions. At the end of verse 12, "Do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you say, 'Well, for so I am.' If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet." Verse 15, "For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. Most assuredly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is he who is sent greater than he who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them." So here was the disciples' greatest and most vivid lesson on ministry. It's about servanthood. It's about serving one another. It's not about being somebody. And by the way, there is no need to make up any special foot washing ceremonies to underline this, because there are ample opportunities to refresh and to serve one another if we are willing to do so. I remember once many years ago when we had some brothers staying with us. And one morning, when I was about to put on my shoes on my way out to work, I noticed that my pair of old shoes had been not only cleaned, but thoroughly polished, so that it was clearly evident that someone had done something about it. It was a very simple but touching act that manifested this ministry of washing saints' feet. In fact, if I had the choice, I would rather not have someone wash my own feet because I'm very ticklish. But I don't mind having someone clean and shine my shoes for me. So that's the third way to be a church carer, washing saints' feet. And the fourth way to be a church carer from 1 Timothy is willing to share. And we find this in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 17 and 18. Command those who are rich in this present age not to be haughty, nor to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God, who gives us richly all things to enjoy. Let them do good, that they may be rich in good works, ready to give, willing to share. Here is yet another verse in this lovely epistle where it can be so easily passed over as something irrelevant to us. We say, this is for the rich, and I'm not rich. The problem with that line of reasoning is always that we are looking on people who have more than us, not on the many others who have much less than us. Now, I would like to say that this specific command to those who are rich in this present age is really, if you think about it seriously, applicable to almost everyone in an affluent country, if we are judged by the world standard of living and poverty. Because what we spend on a meal outside can be some household's monthly income elsewhere. Such wide disparities in economic means, not only between countries, but within a country, can be unknown to us if we just live within the circle of comfort and convenience that we have always known. This was brought home to us in a striking way when we used to sponsor children from a poorer and less developed country through their education with a monthly amount that you wouldn't even think about. And just by doing something very simple and practicable, but which is almost negligible to us by cost, we saw three generations of children through their critical growing up years of education, one after another, while all the time we gripe and grumble about the increasingly high costs of education back where we are. Now here again in verse 18, we come across good works. It says, let them do good that they may be rich in good works, ready to give, willing to share. Let's have a clear understanding of what good works really mean. Good works are characterized by openness of heart, generosity of spirit, and liberality towards others. Whenever we speak about something being well done, the commendation is on the one who has done that thing. So we can do works which are good only because that person doing it is good and has a good spirit. Now, none of us are good in ourselves because only God is good. But when by grace He has forgiven us of our sins and made us righteous in Him and filled us by His Holy Spirit and therefore gives us a good spirit which bears the fruit of the Spirit, we are able as a result of that to do works which are good. Now notice the two attitudes which are mentioned in this verse with regard to doing good works. Again in 1 Timothy chapter 6 verse 18, it says, ready to give and willing to share. So those are the two key attributes for doing good works. Let's take the first one, ready to give or to distribute. That means to be generous. Jesus said that it is more blessed to give than to receive in Acts chapter 20 verse 35. It's one of the important sayings of Jesus that are not recorded in the Gospels, but outside of it. We have a gospel of giving, not of getting. And this is totally unlike the world's attitude of give and take. But rather it is giving without expecting a return of favor. It is against our natural grain, which is always looking out for what we can get out of something. Whether we actually verbalize it or not, our question seems to be always, what's in it for me? We are natural go-getters rather than go-givers. But if we are to allow Jesus Christ to change us, we should be ready to give. Secondly, it's willing to share. That means not closely guarding everything as my own, but treating all as freely given by God. And that includes sharing of time and energy, not only money, in doing good works and God's work. There are some people who may need time or attention or practical help more than just financial help. And in an affluent and busy society like ours, we can often be cash rich but time poor. We are more ready to give money than we are of our time. I once preached at another church, and after the meeting there was a brother who came up to ask me out of the blue if I had any electrical problems at home that needed fixing. I said, sure enough, I have plenty. No doubt accumulated over the years which I had left unfixed, and I was so grateful. This must be the Lord's provision for my need. And this dear brother appeared the next day and spent a whole morning going from one room to another and rectified what had stopped working and had been left untouched. The command to do good works is not only for those who are rich in this age, but those who are spiritually rich or blessed. As it says in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 8, you are already full, you are already rich. Take note that the apostle is talking about now, already, not later. We often put off doing by saying, we'll do it when we have the time. But as Oswald Chambers put it in his usual pointed style, the only time I will have is the day after I'm dead, and that's in eternity. We will have all the time in eternity, then, but not the opportunity to do now, which is in the present. A sobering thought is that when we finally feel we can afford the time to do something about it, we might not have the same level of health or energy to do it. We are rich not when we have accumulated more than enough to spare for ourselves, but while we are continually and consistently giving now. And this is the secret of how to be rich now, not someday. Don't buy into the ads which promise how you can be a millionaire by 30. What they don't tell you is how you will be a spiritual wreck and bankrupt by 31. The secret of true financial freedom lies in giving, not getting or hoarding. Who cares? This is a snide remark that we sometimes hear, but really it's something lurking in all of us, even if it is not on our lips. One of the most searching verses I find in the Bible is in Psalm 142, verse 4, where it says, look on my right hand and see, for there is no one who acknowledges me. Refuge has failed me. No one cares for my soul. When one looks to the right, and that stands for the place of help and power, and there's no one who knows, who acknowledges, or who cares, that is a tragic situation. May that not be said of us or of our church. You never know when there is someone nearby or sitting right next to you who may be desperately in need of help, which only you can give simply because you're in the best position to do so. And if you do not care, then that one who is in need will be left uncared. Here is a question. Am I my brother's keeper? That is a saying that actually comes from the book of Genesis in the Bible, Genesis 4:9. Cain answered God defiantly when confronted about the first murder in history, which he committed against his brother Abel. And he asked, am I my brother's keeper? Well, the answer is yes, because by implication, I'm killing if I'm not caring. I'm sinning not by commission, but by omission. So let's be church carers, because we can afford to care for others. Why? Because we can cast all our care upon the Lord, and because the Lord cares for us. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 7. And as you do your part in being a church carer or caretaker, may you continue to be refreshed by the Lord's presence and to be reached by His Word.
As the old song once said, "He ain't heavy, he's my brother. Therefore, I can afford to care for others." Thank you for that word, Kenneth. This is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall, in partnership with TWR Asia. Join us again next time for another reflection from Kenneth Wong. But just before we go, we'd love to hear from you. And here's how you can contact us. You can simply send us a text message. The number is 9431-3813. Or you can write to us at Post Office Box 392, Thompson Road, Post Office, Singapore, 915-714. Now, I recognize that you may not be able to join us each evening for the broadcast, and if that is the case for you, I invite you to visit our website, www.timesofrefreshing.asia, and there you can listen online or download the program to your smartphone or your MP3 player. You can also subscribe to the Times of Refreshing podcast for automatic download through iTunes. I'm McDaniel Phillips, inviting you to join us again for Times of Refreshing.